Mr. Morrison nodded when he had taken it all in, as if he approved. Then he sat across from Papa in front of the unlit fireplace. The boys and I pulled up straight-backed chairs near Papa as Big Ma asked, "How long you gonna be home, son?" Papa looked across at her. "Till Sunday evening," he said quietly. "Sunday?" Mama exclaimed. "Why, today's already Saturday." "I know, baby," Papa said, taking her hand. "But I gotta get that night train out of Vicksburg so I can get back to work by Monday morning." Christopher John, little man, and I groaned loudly, and Papa turned to us. "Papa, can't you stay no longer than that? Last time you come home, you stayed a week," I said. Papa gently pulled one of my pigtails. "Sorry, Cassie girl, but I stay any longer, I might lose my job."
"But Papa..."
"Listen, all y'all," he said, looking from me to the boys, to Mama and Big Ma. "I come home special so I could bring Mr. Morrison. He's gonna stay with us a while." If Mama and Big Ma were surprised by Papa's words, they did not show it, but the boys and I looked with wide eyes at each other, then at the giant. "Mr. Morrison lost his job on the railroad a while back," Papa continued, "and he ain't been able to find anything else. When I asked him if he wanted to come work here as a hired hand, he said he would. I told him we couldn't afford much, food and shelter and a few dollars in cash when I come home in the winter." Mama turned to Mr. Morrison, studied him for a moment, and said, "Welcome to our home, Mr. Morrison." "Ms. Logan," said Mr. Morrison in a deep, quiet voice like the roll of low thunder, "I think you ought to know I got fired off my job. Got in a fight with some men. Beat 'em up pretty bad." Mama stared into Mr. Morrison's deep eyes.
"Whose fault was it?"
Mr. Morrison stared back. "I'd say theirs." "Did the other men get fired?" "No, ma'am," answered Mr. Morrison. "They was white." Mama nodded and stood.
"Thank you for telling me, Mr. Morrison.
You're lucky no worse happened, and we're glad to have you here, especially now." Then she turned and went into the kitchen with Big Ma to prepare supper, leaving the boys and me to wonder about her last words.
"Stacy, what you think?" I asked as we milked the cows in the evening. "How come Papa come home and brung Mr. Morrison?"
Stacy shrugged. "Like he said, I guess." I thought on that a moment.
"Papa ain't never brung nobody here before."
Stacy did not reply.
"You think, Stacy, you think it's 'cause of them burnings TJ was talking about?"
"Burnings?" piped little man, who had interrupted his feeding of the chickens to visit with Lady, our golden mare.
"What's burnings got to do with anything?"
"That happened way over by Smelling's Creek," said Stacy slowly, ignoring little man. "Papa got no need to think..." His voice trailed off, and he stopped milking.
"Think what?" I asked.
"Nothing," he murmured, turning back to the cow. "Don't worry about it." I glared at him.
"I ain't worrying. I just want to know, that's all. And I bet you anything Mr. Morrison come here to do more than work. Sure wish I knew for sure."
Stacy made no reply, but Christopher John said,
I know what I wish. I wish Papa didn't never have to go away no more. I wish he could just stay and stay."
At church the next morning, Mrs. Silas Lanier leaned across me and whispered to Big Ma, "John Henry Berry died last night." When the announcement was made to the congregation, the deacons prayed for the soul of John Henry Berry and the recovery of his brother Beacon and his uncle, Mr. Samuel Berry. But after church, when some of the members stopped by the house to visit, angry, hopeless words were spoken.
"The way I hears it," said Mr. Lanier, "they've been after John Henry ever since he come back from the war and settled on his daddy's place up by Smelling's Creek. Had a nice little place up there, too, and was doing pretty well. Left a wife and 6 children.
Big Ma shook her head. "Just in the wrong place at the wrong time."
The boys and I sat at our study table pretending not to listen, but listening still.
"Henrietta Torgans," said Mrs. Lanier, "you know, Clara Davis's sister that live up there in Strawberry? Well, she's kin to the Berries, and she was with John Henry and Beacon when the trouble got started. They was gonna drop her off at home. You know, John Henry had him one of them old Model T pickups. But they needed some gas, so they stopped by that filling station up there in Strawberry. They was waiting there for the gas when some white men come up messing with them, been drinking, you know. And Henrietta heard one of them say, "That's the nigger Sally Ann said was flirting with her." And when she heard that, she said to John Henry, "Let's get on out of here." He wanted to wait for the gas, but she made him and Beacon get in that car. And them men just watched them drive off and didn't mess with them right then. John Henry, he took her on home, then headed back for his own place. But evidently, them men caught up with him and Beacon again and starts ramming the back of their car. At least that's what Beacon and John Henry told their aunt and uncle when they seed him. John Henry knowed he was running out of gas, and he was afraid he couldn't make it to his own place, so he stopped at his uncle's. But them men dragged him and Beacon both out of that house. And when old man Barry tried to stop it, they lit him a fire with them boys. "It's sure a shame, all right," said TJ's father, a frail, sickly man with a hacking cough. "These folks getting so bad in here. Heard tell they lynched a boy a few days ago in Croston." "And ain't a thing gonna be done about it," said Mr. Lanier. "That's what's so terrible. When Henrietta went to the sheriff and told him what she seed, he called her a liar and sent her on home. Now, I hear tell some of them men that done it been round bragging about it, saying they'd do it again if some other uppity nigger got out of line." Mrs. Avery Tist, "Lord have mercy." Papa sat very quietly while the Laniers and the Averys talked, studying them with serious eyes. Finally, he took the pipe from his mouth and made a statement that seemed to the boys and me to be totally disconnected with the conversation. "In this family, we don't shop at the Wallace store." The room became silent. The boys and I stared at the adults, wondering why. The Laniers and the Averys looked uneasily about them, and when the silence was broken, the subject had changed to the sermon of the day. After the Laniers and the Averys had left, Papa called us to him. "Your mama tells me that a lot of the older children been going up to that Wallace store after school to dance and buy their bootleg liquor and smoke cigarettes. Now, she said she's already told y'all this, but I'm going to tell y'all again, so listen good. We don't want y'all going to that place. Children going there are going to get themselves in a whole lot of trouble one day. There's drinking up there, and I don't like it. And I don't like them Wallaces either. If I ever find out y'all been up there for any reason, I'm going to wear y'all out. Y'all hear me?"
"Yes, sir, Papa," piped Christopher John readily. "I ain't never gone up there."
The rest of us agreed. Papa always meant what he said, and he swung a mean switch.